Watchers podcast, School Librarians Saving the World. This month, we are joined by special guest Joy Piedmont, and we will be discussing mock award events and the ALA Youth Media Awards. My name is Carrie Roeder, and I am the school librarian at Professional Children's School in Manhattan.
And I'm Angie Ungaro. I'm the middle school librarian at Brooklyn Friends School.
I'm Sarah Murphy. I'm the librarian or ad librarian at the Browning School.
And I'm Joy Piedmont. I'm the high school tech integrator at LREI, Little Red Schoolhouse, and Elizabeth Irwin High School.
And she's also a secret librarian, which she'll talk about a little more later. So why don't we start off by talking about what we're reading. Angie, what are you reading?
I'm currently reading The Girl Behind the Glass by author Jane Kelly. She's a local Brooklyn author, and we're having her in for an author visit at BFS. Ooh. She's going to meet with our 4th, 5th, and 6th graders. It should be fun. And on my nightstand, I have her other one of her other books, Nature Girl. So it's a bit of a Jane Kelly few weeks for me. And then also in my adult life, I'm reading Amy Poehler's memoir. Yes, please. Yes, please.
Loved it. This is Sarah, and I this morning finished a book called Boy 21 by Matthew Quick, who's the author most famously of Silver Linings Playbook. This book was brought to my attention by an upper school kid who's been trying to start a book club. It's having mixed results, but he suggested this as the next book, and I think it would be a great book club book. I liked it very much. And then I'm about 20 pages in to Undeniable by Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Oh, nice.
Which features a very earnest looking Bill Nye clad in bow tie on the cover, and he's looking at you and he's like, you can't possibly not believe in evolution, right? Possibly. And I'm 23 pages in, and it turns out lots of people don't believe in evolution. So it's interesting. Very readable.
So I am reading The Art of Racing in the Rain by Garth Stein. Oh. Has anybody read that?
We have the book, but so it's adorable.
It's a really, I heard from several teachers that they were really enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And it's a book about this family and, but it's all told from a dog's perspective.
Right.
So mm-hmm. It's the dog of the owner telling about what's going on. And it's also his journey. He's much older. He's close to death. And he's looking forward to it because he knows that when dogs die, they become human. So he's looking forward to that. And it's a really, I'm almost done with it. And it's really great. And I mentioned it to a few kids and they're interested in doing it for the book club for the high school. And I'm also listening to Journey to the Center of the Earth by Jules Verne, which is read by Tim Curry. And I'm really enjoying that. Joy, what are you reading?
I'm reading All the Bright Places by Jennifer Niven. It's actually next month's HVLA book club pick. This was a book that the publisher billed as Eleanor and Park Meets the Fault in Our Stars, which really...
Whoa.
Right. They're aiming high there. And it really...
It was a turnoff.
It was a real turnoff, but we picked it because it's getting a lot of buzz. Angela Carstensen recommended it. So she said, yeah, we should read it. So it's okay so far.
With a build-up like that, yeah. It's almost hard to love.
But I feel like it would be an easy sell then to teenagers, right?
And
it is.
If you
say, like, I feel like if I said that to a kid, it would blow their mind.
For me, someone saying Fault in Our Stars, Eleanor and Park, selling any book, that's a huge turnoff.
Yeah.
But we actually tested it on a bunch of the kids in the library,
oh, yeah.
And they all went, yes, please, I want this.
So before we move into our mock award events, Joy, can you tell us a little bit about your role at LREI and how you do all the things?
Sure. Oh, that makes me sound so special. I'm not. So I'm technically the high school tech integrator for the high school, which means I am a technology specialist. I work with teachers on technology in their classrooms, yada, yada. I am also, however, though, a librarian because I have my MLIS. So I actually do a lot of reader's advisory, informal librarian stuff, just because I'm in the library. That's where my office is. And the kids know that they can also ask me for book recommendations. They also know that they can come to me for research help. One of the things that we say to the kids at the beginning of the year in their freshman year is that they should think of me and Karen, who's our high school librarian, basically as the same person.
Great.
Wow. And do you feel that there's a benefit in doing, like, wearing secretly both hats?
Well, it's nice because I feel like I don't have to be boxed in by just things that involve computers. And it's nice that I can talk about books with the kids and they trust my opinion. And I like also doing the research component with them. So we feel like we're trying to approach it as thinking about literacies and how we are approaching digital literacy, traditional literacy, media literacy. So I don't know, we're kind of liking the way it's going.
So I just came back from the NYSACE NEAT conference, which I never remember what it stands for, but it's information.
NYSACE Education and Technology.
Okay. Information technology.
Good.
It's a conference. It's a 3-day conference that is technology teachers, technology integrators, system admin people, and librarians all getting together and in a non-conference style. But it really just highlights how much overlap there is, and to be able to do all of those things seems really great.
It's fun. It actually is really fun. So.
So we're very excited to have Joy on, mm-hmm. and I think we're going to start by talking about the library part that you do, yeah. which is running the Mock Prince and Newbery mock event at LREI.
Maybe we should start with just a definition of what a mock award
sure.
is.
Yes.
Can
yeah.
be.
So,
what do you think?
So it is award season. For all the people, there's music awards and movie yeah. awards, and we wouldn't all have it without our book awards. So the Youth Media Awards, run by ALA, they're the ones who put on the big show. Those are like the Super Bowl also, essentially, mm-hmm. for librarians. So as a result, the Newbery Award, the Prince Award, several awards that you may or may not be familiar with, look it up, we will provide the links, have kind of resulted in these events where sometimes I kind of liken it to fantasy football, but I don't think that's quite right because I don't exactly understand fantasy football, but where you...
But that's a great analogy.
It's almost right.
It's almost right. Yeah. We're working with
well,
it. In
I
that,
play fantasy baseball, and I would say that it is a little bit right, except that you don't necessarily get credit if your pick wins.
Right.
Whereas in fantasy sports, that's where the joy comes.
Right. So with these mock award events, for example, we're going to be talking about Mock Caldecott, Mock Newbery, and Mock Prince specifically today. Essentially, you have librarians who are using the criteria that are given for each award to kind of whittle down a list of potential candidates for who might be in the running to win this specific award. And it gets really exciting, and events happen all throughout, for sure, New York. We know within our organization, HVLA, there are librarians doing it. We know it's happening across the nation. whether it's happening in school or with a class in the classroom, or, you know, like extra library groups, or just among adults, which we'll talk about all of those situations, where people are making their projections and their bets for who might sweep or run away with these different awards. So, in speaking about the Mock Prince, we'll start there. We know that you, you and Karen together, right?
Yes. So Karen Silverman is
yes.
the high school librarian at LREI. Mm-hmm. And
she also has a blog, right?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
So Karen and I, because we are the same person, as I said before, we also with Sarah Corey, she is the librarian at Grace Church. And so we write for School Library Journal, Someday My Prince Will Come. It is a prince speculation blog, and mm-hmm. that runs from September right up until the awards. We do a live blog and then a wrap-up the next day. And in conjunction with the blog, we work with, but really it's just us again, the Hudson Valley Library Association, to host a mock prints. This year was the first year we also did a mock Newbery, but the mock prints now, this was our third year running it.
Excellent. Can you tell us a little bit about like the structure of the event? How do you select books? When you convene, like what's the process you go through to kind of cast your votes?
Sure. So every year, you know, 3 years now, we've had the best intentions of getting a reading list out early. And due to various circumstances every year, it usually goes out in November, December. But we'd like to try.
You're doing all the things, so there's not a lot of time.
So we try. We tend to just keep our eyes on starred reviews, keep our eyes on Twitter, see what people are talking about. Other reviews, we follow some other blogs like Stacked. And we just kind of like take suggestions from everywhere. Once we have a list of books that we think are going to be strong contenders, and it's also based on what we're reading throughout the year, we try to send that out to the HVLA membership, and we vote down the list so that we've got 12 books so that when we come together in January to discuss them and debate, we are running it as though we are a committee at ALA deciding on the real award, thus the mock part of it.
That's great. And I have attended at least the first 2 years of the mock prints, and it was a lot of fun and a lot of excitement and then a lot of, you know, debate and gnashing of teeth and pulling of hair. Or
maybe, and this is kind of an all-day event, right? It starts kind of with a lunch, and then it's several hours of these very intense...
And we
debate.
It goes by so quickly, but at the end you realize that you've been sitting in a room talking about books for 5 hours.
Yeah,
right.
And then it hits you.
Do you have someone moderate so that the discussion ends up being somewhat even in terms of the amount of time you're giving to each book?
So the first year, I think we learned from the first year because we did it a little freeform and it felt unwieldy. So the second year and this year, I plotted out to the minute how much time we would spend on each book. And we stuck to it kind of well enough that we were able to get through all of the books and felt good about it. So there's no moderator per se, but I have my eye on the time. And the only moderation that happens is, so if Angie really supported a book, I think you actually did Eleanor and Park last year, or
I might have.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I don't know.
But you have somebody facilitating.
Yeah, you have
that
someone
book,
opening sort of the discussion and saying, here's why I support this book for the award this year or for some sort of recognition, and then it opens up the discussion.
Right.
And at the end of it, do you vote?
We do.
Mm,
the voting's the best part.
Is it secret ballot?
No. Well, yes and no. So
it's good.
It's a very kind of intricate formula that you came up with too. It's not as simple as casting your ballot one and done kind of thing. So.
Well, you have to do a weighted vote, otherwise it doesn't actually make sense.
Right.
Because you're ranking the books. This year was a little strange because we split off to a mock Newbery also. We had gotten 10 to 12 people first and second year. We split this year, so each group had about 5, which we should have expected, and yet was a surprise anyway.
Yeah.
So we had about 5 people. So the secret ballot thing just kind of ended up, if you knew the handwriting of the people,
right,
you kind of
right.
knew. And we, having talked to each other about these books the
right.
entire afternoon.
Right, and spending the afternoon advocating for one book. Yeah,
it's no secret. So we just use a whiteboard. We tally up the votes. First place votes get 7 points. Second, 5.
Oh, wow.
Third place votes get 3 points. Last place votes get 1 point. So there's a structure to it so that you are able, in the end, to find the book that has the most support, most consensus, and it's a lot of fun.
So without spoiling our next segment, which is about the award winners. Who won
in the
your mock?
So our winner for the mock prints was The Family Romanov by Candace Fleming. Nonfiction, which was really exciting because it's great nonfiction, and these awards tend to be dominated by fiction. We gave honors to I'll Give You the Sun by Jandy Nelson, How I Discovered Poetry by Marilyn Nelson, Egg and Spoon by Gregory Maguire, and This One Summer by Mariko and Jillian Tamaki.
And how many books did you start with in that list?
12. Okay. So we ended up honoring 5, and yeah. We Were Liars was a point away from being an honor book. I just feel like that's really important to mention.
Yeah.
Everyone was really excited about We Were Liars, and then there was a backlash, but it came close.
Yeah.
And what won the Newbery?
So Newbery, they had actually a lot of similar titles to us. Their winner was Brown Girl Dreaming, which did not surprise anyone.
Yeah.
they gave honors to The Night Gardener, Green Glass House, and also Family Romanoff.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. So we know that this particular mock award event was held with librarians, and then also we invited, or not we, I'll say you. I am a part of HVLA, but I had no hand in the inviting. You invited other folks who are part of, like, the publishing industry, the book industry at large. So we had all kinds of voices in there, which was so much fun. I'm speaking on past experience, not this past year, which I unfortunately could not attend. And people are also administering these mock prints, mock Newbery with students. I know that at our school, Brooklyn Friends School, for the past few years, not this year, had a bit of a shift, but it's a good one. For the past few years, I've been doing mock Newbery events with my students. And I've done every possible iteration you can imagine, from everyone in my 5th grade class, we are doing this, which can be challenging. to it's totally voluntary, which it can also be challenging when, you know, it's going on for weeks and weeks and weeks. I've done, like, virtual book club mock Newbery. That was a lot of fun and pretty successful. And, you know, live in person. So similarly set up to what you said, Joy, where the librarians, myself with some other local Brooklyn librarians, we select our short list of 10 to 12, and then those are the ones I focus on with the students. And then from there, eventually we kind of try to time it out with the live event so we can have our own vote, compare notes. And usually they're really excited because they a lot of the list that we do select, like you said, paying attention to starred reviews, etc., blogs, you know, what's the buzz? Typically, there are books that do appear from our list onto some of the winners. So that's always really exciting to see. This year, like I said, I ended up not doing it for a number of different reasons, but I'm super excited because we are bringing Mock Newbery back at BFS next year, working with the 5th grade team, and we're going to weave it into the independent reading curriculum. And I feel like that's going to be a huge weight off of, like, how can I make them read these books? And it's going to be great because everyone will be involved.
In the past, how have you gotten them to read those books?
You know,
12 books?
No, they don't. I mean, so take note, librarians out there. Maybe save for one or two always overly ambitious readers. Really, you're lucky if you get them reading 2 or 3. But at the very least, they have some recognition. I will book talk all the books. Often we watch book trailers to kind of generate some excitement. So they have familiarity, so they still do, like, develop kind of a relationship with these books. I know in the lower school, the librarians at my school also have been doing a mock Caldecott for years, and that you, Sarah, at Browning have also had done a mock Caldecott, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I need to say, first off, I have not done it, but my colleague, Susan Levine,
yes.
Who teaches pre-primary, which is what we call kindergarten, and first grade, and some second grade classes as well in our library. So for the past several years, she has done a modified mock Caldecott, and I think the modification is necessary when you're dealing with 5 and 6 year olds, some 7 year olds. And she comes up with a list much in the way that you guys come up with your lists, and then she brings those into the library, does read alouds. It takes several weeks to get all of these books kind of, you know, checked off the list. And of course, those buzzy books sometimes change and adapt in that time. So it's not easy to get the definitive list.
Can I just say, I think that I've never done a mock Caldecott or Mock Newbery, but I think that does seem like one of the challenges. I've done the Irma Black Award with first and second graders before, And that is something they give you the four books.
Right.
You know, okay, I'm going to spend these 6 weeks mm-hmm. going over each of these books. We're going to read them. We're going to vote on them. And at the end, one of these four books is going to win. And I feel like if you're doing that, you could read 12 books and maybe none of them are on there, which yeah. seems like a really big challenge there.
Particularly, I think, with the Caldecott.
Yeah. There's so much published.
And as we will discuss later, there's also a really broad definition of what a picture book or a book with pictures is.
Oh, sure.
Is.
Yeah.
So, it's a huge challenge. But Susan's technique is to come up with this list, share the books that she feels make the cut in some way. And she usually will do maybe 3 or 4 per class. And have the boys vote. It's all boys' school. It's not like an exclusive.
I think it's always important to note
women
that
don't about get the vote at Browning.
Whenever Sarah is talking, I feel like we need to explain. Sarah's fine with girls.
Our longtime listeners know that I work at an all boys' school. So she has them vote 1, 2, or 3. And mm-hmm. she's gone up to 5 in the past, but she felt this year it was really important to stick to 3. Mm. She says next year she's even considering just 1 or 2. That these young kids have a really hard time with what 2 might mean on a scale of 1 to 3.
Yet, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Exactly. Keep it simple. And one of the other tricky things with that age group is that what they often are really responding to is the story. Mm. And their response to the pictures is often maybe a little more subconscious or integrated so closely into the story that they, you know, they don't get that aspect of things. And an example of that, I think, is the book Frida.
Oh, yeah.
Which Viva may come Viva. Up in our conversation later. Uh-huh.
No spoilers.
They did not really respond to that book, and they kept saying, well, there's hardly any words. Mm-hmm. So we're saying, oh, right, but some of the words are Spanish. Yeah. whereas there's another Frida Kahlo picture book biography, I think, is it Jonah Winter?
Yes, that one is Frida, and I think the one you're referring to is Viva Frida.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So from a few years ago, that Frida book, they love.
Oh, yeah.
Because
me too.
her life story is really amazing. Mm-hmm. This newer Viva Frida is much more evocative mm-hmm. of the life story. Mm-hmm. And they thought it didn't have enough words. So in the end, the other challenge is that we have snow days. We have, you know, holidays, field trips, and whatnot.
And you're only seeing them. Once a week.
Right. Mm. So Susan tried to tally the votes and just felt like it wasn't really fair because not every kid had heard every book.
Yeah.
So we don't have a definitive winner, but I will tell you that the sort of short list, based on what I observed and what Susan told me, Sam and Dave dig a hole. Matt Barnett is the author and John Klassen is the illustrator. It's awesome. The Farmer and the Clown, written and illustrated by Marla Frazee. I title that one The Mennonite and the Little Kid. I find it very weird, but the boys liked it a lot. My Teacher is a Monster by Peter Brown.
Yeah.
Which I really hope one day Peter Brown gets his because he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
The kids love Troublemaker by Lauren Castillo, which features a boy doing naughty things, but really it's not the boy doing the naughty things, it's a secret raccoon. And Beagle, Unimaginary Friend by Dan Santat was also a favorite. Although not among the older boys who seem to have lost their imagination.
That's
how it all fell out, and it was pretty cool. So maybe we should transition now into the actual award. Yes.
I think we definitely should.
Great. Well, then let's start from oldest to youngest. Let's start with the Alex Award. Carrie, can you tell us what that is?
So the Alex Award is one of my favorite awards. There are many awards given out at this event. And the Alex Award goes to the 10 best adult books that appeal to teen readers, which means that they're books that I like to read. And so there were a few on here that I've read, but mostly I love this award because it means I'm going to read all of these books this year. So some of the winners of this award were All the Light We Cannot See, which I just read recently, which was very good. And my favorite, Everything I Never Told You, which I'm planning to read next. And one of my favorite books of last year, The Martian by Andy Weir, which is super phenomenal. And if you haven't read it, you should absolutely read it. It is about a man who is stranded on Mars.
Hmm.
And I don't want to say anything else, but it is absolutely fantastic. And if you listen to it on Audible, the narrator, who I can't remember his name right now, is just perfect for this book and is just narrators. I really, you know, can make or break an audiobook, and he is really great. So the Alex Ward, there are 10 books altogether that you should definitely check out, and we will be linking to all of these awards.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Prince Award.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us about what the Prince Award is?
Sure. The Prince Award is actually the Michael L. Prince Award, and it's named after a librarian who was named Michael Prince. And it is given to the most distinguished work of literature for young adults. So this year, the winner was I'll Give You the Sun by Jandy Nossen, which elicited a big, big scream from my library because I was watching the awards with our middle school librarian, Jen Swan, and Karen. So we were all very excited. And I'll Give You the Sun was like a personal favorite from last year, so I was thrilled. The honor books were, I can't remember.
And We Stay by Jenny Hubbard, The Carnival at Bray by Jessie Ann Foley, Grasshopper Jungle by Andrew Smith, and This One Summer by Mariko Tamaki, illustrated by Jillian Tamaki, which that's definitely a popular graphic novel that we have in our library.
Which we also discussed on a previous podcast. The reason I read it was because Carrie Charette had told us about it over the summer, I believe. And then I read it, and it's really
it's wonderful.
It's beautiful.
It is.
We were just really thrilled that we, our mock event predicted two of the, two of the winners, which was great.
Which and were I'll Give You the Sun and
This One Summer.
And actually, that happened historically in the all 3 years.
We tend to be wrong. But actually on the blog also, between myself, Karen, and Sarah, we predicted three of these books, which was an all-time high,
which
making us feel awesome.
Very good.
Grasshopper Jungle was the other one that we predicted, so we felt amazing.
I feel like it's notable that Andrew Smith, who wrote Grasshopper Jungle, published two YA novels.
Yes.
Both, or just one, that made the HVLA?
They were both on our list. We discussed them back to back.
I just think he is great. I have not read Grasshopper Jungle, but I like the other books I've read of his.
At BFS, so one of the things I like to do, they always have the live streaming. Thank you, ALA, for putting that together.
Yes.
In the morning, and sometimes I get really lucky and it coincides with my classes. So I was able to watch a little bit of the live streaming with my sixth grade class and then use the recordings with my fifth and sixth grade classes. And in particular, everyone wants to know about the Newbery.
Yeah.
Newbery is super exciting. We watch, of course, some of the other awards that are given because I always want to point out that there's some really excellent awards that are part of the YMAs, and we'll talk about that later. But this year, it was really interesting. We only had two honor books. And I know for a lot of people in the industry and librarians, if you listen to the recording of the live broadcast, you heard a giant groan in the audience when they said two honor books. And I paused there and I said, hey, students, do you know why these librarians are groaning? And we talk about how
librarians are grumpy.
Because in the Newbery Award, the part of their criteria and rules are that you are allowed to award up to 4 honor books. And for a lot of people in the publishing industry, librarians, the general consensus is if you can give 4 honor books, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Because it's good for the industry. It's good for books. It's good for authors. It's
good
for librarians in
good
schools.
For the stickers.
Yeah. So Yeah, that big groan was something to take note of. So our Otter books this year did also elicit a lot of excitement and not too much surprise because Brown Girl Dreaming, of course, Jackie Woodson, she's sweeping the nation of book awards. And
well, the only surprise there
was that it was an honor.
That it was an honor. Good point, which will get us closer to our, you know, stunned moment. El Defo by CeCe Bell got an honor, which, my kids were so excited. Good. That's a new addition to our fifth grade curriculum, and they were psyched.
I have chosen it for our next fourth grade Guys Read book club.
Love it.
That's
great.
And I was so excited. And it's always kind of a risk when I tell the dads they have to read a graphic novel. So I was so justified and felt good when it got that award.
That is fantastic. And then, of course, the winner, The Crossover by Kwame Alexander. I have to say, my students were super psyched. But a lot of people were surprised that The Crossover took the Newbery Gold over Brown Girl Dreaming. And if you were paying attention to the Coretta Scott King Author Awards, there was a little bit of a swip-swap there where Brown Girl Dreaming took the gold for the Coretta Scott Author Award and The Crossover got an honor for Coretta Scott Author.
It's also interesting that two of the three of those books are written in verse.
Right.
Right.
And which worked very well with my curriculum because we were doing poetry and we had been reading books in verse, so this was a great example, but... Yeah.
Two of the three were written in verse, and the third is a graphic novel.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And this
unusual year.
Of all the awards, the Newbery Medal, first of all, its description is it's awarded annually to the author of the most distinguished contribution to American literature for children. It's very broad.
So broad.
And it has words like distinguished and American and literature. And I think it's extremely thrilling that... verse and sequential art were noticed in that way.
Yeah. And super exciting. I'll just say as a side note, when I was book talking, The Crossover and Brown Girl Dreaming, which I did, in particular for The Crossover, Kwame Alexander does have these two wonderfully, wonderful YouTube clips where he talks about his book, The Crossover, and some, like, myths about The Crossover. And they're super short and super accessible and just a lot of fun. And he has a great, there's a little great YouTube clip reaction video of him. We'll make sure we include those things all in the links. So that was exciting. Cool. And then we have the Caldecott.
Yes, the Caldecott. So unlike the Newbery, the Caldecott had several honor books this year. In fact, six of them. But I'll start with the winner. It was The Adventures of Beagle, The Unimaginary Friend by Dan Santat. Santat? Am I saying that right?
Sounds good.
Which was definitely popular. Beautiful, like, rich colors, beautiful illustrations, a sweet story. It requires you to really pay attention, which I like in a picture book. But I had kind of mixed results with the kids I read it to. But it's beautiful. Nana in the City was an Caldecott honor, illustrated by Lauren Castillo, who illustrated the Troublemaker book that our students were so fond of. The Noisy Paint Box, the colors and sounds of Kandinsky's abstract art, illustrated by Mary Grandpre, was an honor book as well. Another honor book was Sam and Dave Dig a Hole, which is completely pleasing to everyone who's human.
I teach 6th to 12th graders, but I really want to read that book.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing stopping you. It'll not take long. I also highly recommend the book trailer, in which the author and illustrator dig a hole. Viva Frida, illustrated by... can you help me with this name, Angie?
Yuyi Morales?
Oh,
Yuyi Morales.
Like it's spelled Yuyi Morales, which is a biography of Frida Kahlo. The Right Word, Roger and His Thesaurus. No surprise that librarians
want to honor
that one with a Caldecott honor illustrated by Melissa Sweet. And here's the jaw dropper, everybody. This One Summer... illustrated by Jillian Tamaki, written by Mariko Tamaki. And we have talked about this book several times already because it was also a Prince honor book and it was a HVLA print mock Prince honor book as
well.
Yes. Lots of shock here.
I would say it was a real head scratcher. When I saw that, thinking, huh? Did I miss something?
Well, let's backtrack a little. Why? what is the Caldecott Award, and why would it be surprising for a graphic novel aimed at young teens to be honored in this way?
I might just say, to before you start that conversation, I would actually argue that it's best for older teens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it is a nostalgia read, but I'm just going to put that out there.
Okay.
Thank you for putting that out there. I think because the Caldecott is an award given for best illustration, and I'm sure I'm looking for the correct wording here. We've got all our our winners open here, but yeah, maybe you can help me with the exact wording. But yeah, the most distinguished American picture book for children is what it says on my ALA website right now.
Yeah.
So it is. In the history of the award, been associated as an award for illustration for children. I agree with you, Joy, that I don't consider this book a book for young children. Definitely older middle grade. I can have my middle grade kids get into it, but there is even some question of, is middle grade for the Caldecott?
Yeah.
I think we experienced something similar with Hugo Cabret.
The Invention of Hugo Cabret.
Where there was a lot of head scratching.
Like,
does it fit? Does it work?
Wondering with Susan's classes, when she announces what the winners are, I would not let a first grader check out this one summer.
Well, that is exactly what I was thinking.
Right? Like, how do you approach that?
Mm-hmm.
The truth is that they've forgotten they even did that.
Okay. That's true. That makes sense.
We're talking about first graders.
They may not approach it. I need to read this one summer.
And their own votes are so much more exciting to them.
Yes.
What the committee of librarians say.
That's true.
Yes, it pleases them when the committee agrees with them, and it might disappoint them when something they like doesn't win, but they're not, like, hanging on by a thread the way the librarians are.
And I will say this. I mean, some of these awards were created a long time ago, the Newbery, the Caldecott. They're older. They have history. And using the phrase children, however long ago, can feel very different to how we look at children now. So I talk about how some of the wording can feel kind of nebulous with my fifth graders when we're talking about, like, hey, let's look at the criteria for the John Newbery and break it down. Children... I think I read somewhere, and I'm not sure if it was on the ALA website or maybe this was in conversation, but children refer to kids anywhere from 8 years old to 14 years old.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's a wide range. And we talk about how a third grader may be a lot different than what they want to read and what's right for them to, or going to work for them to read than a seventh grader or... God, what, a ninth grader? 14-year-old?
Ninth grade.
So let me tell you a little bit about an article from the Horn Book, September 2013, Picture Book or Illustrated Book. And it's talking about Caldecott Committee and what it is they're looking for. And one of the questions that they have to ask is, what is a picture book? So here, according to this article, here is what the Caldecott terms and criteria state. A picture book for children, as distinguished from other books with illustrations, is one that essentially provides the child with a visual experience. A picture book has a collective unity of storyline, theme, or concept developed through the series of pictures of which this book is comprised. So I think we can all agree that definitely does not discount a graphic novel or a comic.
Sure.
Right. And this one in particular.
Number two, a picture book for children is one in which children are an intended potential audience. The book displays respect for children's understandings, abilities, and appreciations. Children are defined as persons of ages up to and including 14, and picture books for this entire age range are to be considered.
Well, if you think of the way we categorize young people now, we have new terms like teen and tweens and pre-tween.
But they are still children.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. But do I refer to my 14-year-old ninth graders as children?
I do sometimes.
I do all the time.
I usually fall into young people.
I call my 18-year-olds kids. and that's essentially
it's the same thing. I mean, I call them children when I want to get their attention because I know it bothers them, but for the most part I'll call them
I
kids.
Do not do that, but I'm going to start doing it.
No, I feel like children can feel condescending, like it using does. The term children like can feel condescending. Yeah. So a lot of times when I'm talking about these awards, I will say the Newbery. I won't necessarily refer to children, but I'll say
it's for
young people.
Right,
yeah.
Because I have middle schoolers.
Right.
Well, it's interesting because this year was particularly a year where so many of the books were really, you know, kind of for middle school kids, kind of for high school kids. There was a lot of crossover. Like, yeah. Family Romanov was one. Mm-hmm. The Night Gardener. Another personal favorite of mine, The River Man. Like, all of these books were...
Although I would put that firmly in middle school. But it's...
Right.
I can see what you mean by that. Mm-hmm.
I feel like
I would have been much more comfortable with This One Summer getting a Newbery.
Mm.
And even still, I think I would be a little confused.
But it couldn't have, I don't think. Wait, maybe?
It could have. Why not?
I thought it wasn't that the story can't be carried through pictures for the Newbery.
I don't think so.
That is El Defo.
Mm-mm.
Right.
Ah, I remember why I think this. Because Stacey Dillon, who is our lower school librarian at LREI, she was on the Newbery Committee in 2012 when they gave the award to Dead End in Norvelt.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt really strongly last year when Flora and Ulysses won.
Yeah.
That because there is a panel in there of illustration that carries the story along, that it actually disqualified the book. And so she feels really strongly the same way about El Defo, actually.
Wow.
But that's the thing. When, at the inception of these awards, they did not lay out everything so clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Which leaves a lot of room for interpretation, makes things fuzzy.
Mm.
And that's why I think... We're coming up with more and more awards to cover areas that have either been overlooked or I don't know. Like a lot of times when I'm telling you, when I go over these with my students, I'm like, this can be kind of confusing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about the awards that cover some of these areas, newer awards covering previously overlooked areas.
Yes. I have a couple favorites, and then I'm looking through the list and I realize, oh, am I just going to name all of them? No. So we talked about the Coretta Scott King Award, and Coretta Scott King actually, there's an umbrella of awards, but one given for author, illustrator, new author, or new talent. So there's several there, and the Coretta Scott King Awards recognize an African-American author, illustrator for books for children and young adults. So it's a range of ages, and there's a range of mediums. So whether it's text, illustration, so it covers a lot there. Kind of along those lines, there's the Pura Belle Prey, which I really enjoy. They also have an author and illustrator award, and that is honoring a Latino writer or illustrator whose children's books best portray, affirm, and celebrate the Latino cultural experience. And then I have a few other favorites. Please, anyone jump in if you want to mention some. But I always like to highlight for my students the Stonewall Book Award.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an English language children's young adult books of exceptional merit relating to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender experience. And then I'll stop talking. Somebody else can talk. But I also have a tendency to also really enjoy the Schneider Family Book Award.
I really like that award.
I really think they come up with a lot of good picks for that one, and I think it's popular with the students. But the Family Schneider Award embodies the artistic expression of
disability experience
yes.
for child and adolescent
Thank
audiences.
You.
And one of the things that I think is so great about the books that get that award is that they are for everyone.
Yeah.
That just like all these other awards, they're for everyone, but we are highlighting a particular experience.
Right. I think it's great because I think a lot of those books given awards in those categories may get overlooked. While we do have some overlap, as with the Coretta Scott King and the Newbery, yes, we see that happens. I think if we weren't looking out for some of these specific experiences around identity, then they may get passed by, and I'm so glad that they're not.
Well, this year in particular, if you look at the lists, is very diverse. And I think a lot of the credit has to go to the We Need Diverse Books movement.
I agree.
Because I felt really proud watching the stream and seeing that every category had just incredible diversity and just incredible books. Yeah. And it really felt like a really good moment to be librarians and to be in this.
Well,
you know,
if that isn't a clue to the publishing industry, right? To step up their game.
And also shows what a movement like that can do.
Yeah.
That this movement on Twitter and on social media and has really made such a difference in such a short amount of time.
Absolutely.
So what about snubs? Were there any snubs this year, in your opinion? Mm.
So one of the books that I was mentioning before we started recording, because we chat for quite a while before we start recording, was, and I don't know if it was my favorite book or anything like that, but it's definitely a book that I've been thinking about since I finished it. Lies We Tell Ourselves by Robin Talley. Has anybody read that book?
No, tell us about it.
So it's a book that takes place, I believe, in 1957 and has to do with school integration in the South. And so it goes, like many books now, goes back and forth between two characters. And it goes, one of the characters is an African-American girl who is going into this white school, and it is an absolutely just horrific experience. Every day is just another horrible thing happening, and she's doing it because her family wants her to do this, and it means so much to the whole movement. And then the other, it's not every other chapter, it's kind of every other section, is from this young white girl who has been raised very conservative. Her father is the newspaper editor and hates black people, mostly because she's never met any of them. And so obviously they have to work on a school project together, and they get to know each other. What's interesting about it is it could just be a book about race and about this historical time where I feel like as a kid you could read it and, depending on where you live, think, oh, but racism is over now. Right? Like the way a lot of
our
silly children
think.
And think that it's a historical thing. But the kind of twist that Robin Talley puts in there, which at first seemed unnecessary to me, and then I kind of figured out why she did it, was both of these girls wind up having feelings for each other.
Oh.
And having to repress them because I'm supposed to get married. I'm supposed to have, I'm not supposed to feel this way. Nobody can know this. And in talking about civil rights and white and black issues so well, what she's really doing, I think, is really showing how gay rights, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's our civil rights issue right now that's at the forefront where, you know, there are kids who are feeling in 1957, like, I could never tell anybody that, and I could never do that. And it's kind of highlighting that. And so they both are kind of exploring this together, but while also navigating this very kind of direct black-white issue.
Right.
But it's really talking about this underlying thing. So I thought it was a really interesting book. And it was definitely very contrived in a lot of ways. But I don't know, I thought it's something that I've been thinking about a lot since I've read it. So I would have been interested to see that on the Stonewall list
or
on the Prince's list.
Mm. One book that I was a little disappointed, maybe not to see in the actual Prince, but in the mock Prince, was the Vigilante Poets of Selwyn Academy, which is on your long list,
it
but
was.
Not your short list.
Didn't make it.
And I really liked that book. I thought it was an excellent example of, like, tight plotting. Really good plot action, broadly appealing, I think, to a lot of different types of readers. It pleased me. I'm not necessarily saying, oh, it should have won, it was the best thing ever, but it pleased me, and I was hoping to hear a little bit more about it.
I personally really loved How I Discovered Poetry by Marilyn Nelson, another novel in verse.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a memoir in verse, so even more unique. and it's just It's just gorgeous. I don't consider myself to be someone who reads poetry pretty much ever. And so I read it, and, you know, you can read it in a sitting, a very short sitting. And I went, oh, that's so beautiful. And then I actually talked to somebody who understands poetry very, very closely and told me about why it's so brilliant, because the structure of each poem is a sonnet. And it's iambic pentameter, and it's a sonnet without a turn, the traditional turn in the middle. But they're tightly constructed poems that alone is really impressive. But she takes herself from 5 to 15, and the voice is so pitch perfect that you really feel like you are experiencing this woman grow up, you know, as a child. And there's a lot of, like, play with language that's so great. I don't know if I expected it to be recognized, but I was really hoping and a little sad.
I don't know if I have one particular snub. I think it was kind of a snub just to have two honor books. I feel like there were, I mean, I don't know if there's one that I was, the Newbery, to just have two honor books for the Newbery. I don't think there is any book that I was particularly married to, but like, I know like The Night Gardener got a lot of great attention. I'm not sure why. It makes me wonder, like, what was that conversation like when they were, you know, getting down to the, you know, I don't know, the blood, sweat, and tears of deciding what book was going to get an honor and what book was going to get a medal. Because I feel like there were some good books published in 2014. So I just...
Like when the Oscars said you could have up to 10 movies nominated, and when they don't nominate 10 movies, you're like, what are you... Why?
Right. Yeah. They the exist, you know?
Yeah. I don't know.
Nightcrawler.
Just saying, this is not a movie podcast.
I don't know. That just kind of surprises me when I know we're able to come up with at least a dozen books every year for our Mock Newbery. They couldn't pick from their 300.
Yeah, absolutely. I found that to be disparate.
Just confusing.
It would be interesting if any of those like members wrote something, like wrote an essay or wrote a blog post about
defending
like
their
what
choice.
Their process was like. Mm-hmm.
I assume that there must have also been books on the table that, you know, people argued for. Yeah. When you don't have a consensus, you don't have a consensus.
I would suspect it has something to do with consensus. Yeah. That maybe there were too many and nobody would give.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know, and actually, so Stacey's year, they also only awarded two honors, which I didn't know until she said, because we were talking about it, like, two honors. She said, my year didn't, only gave two. And she said for her, they, you know, that was the number of books they felt like deserved recognition. And so I
there's
don't
a bad
on that, but.
Yeah, but there are years when it's like, ugh, slim pickings.
This was a rich year.
Yeah. I don't think this was a slim pickings year.
As thrilled as I am, and I think you guys agree, that we honored two novels in verse and a graphic novel, memoir actually, there wasn't any straight up prose that you loved. Like that's cuckoo.
Agreed.
In a really strong year.
In a strong year. For sure.
So, away from the negative, let's turn to the super positive and talk about our new favorite thing.
Yeah.
Sarah, what's your new favorite thing?
All right. Well, as usual, my new favorite thing is never new nor favorite, but it would be more aptly titled My Favorite Thing This Week, which is something that I do every year with my second graders, but I only do it once a year. So, I get really excited when it's time to do it, and it's Reader's Theater, which is, of course... exactly what it sounds like. It's reading something out loud in the manner of a script, not necessarily with, you know, any props or even staging or anything like that. So the periodical Library Sparks always has some good ideas for Reader's Theater. But being me, I always like to adapt and write my own Reader's Theater scripts. And for the past couple of years, I've done an adaptation of Here Comes the Garbage Barge, which is written by Jonah Winter. And it's a great true story of the tons and tons and tons of garbage that went all over North American waters in the late 80s. And it's really fun to hear the kids do this out loud because you suddenly realize that, children you've never heard a peep from are actually these like brilliant interpreters of words and literature. And others who want all the attention all the time can't really step up and do it in that moment. So it's a fun thing. I love to do it once a year, Reader's Theater.
Great.
Joy, what about you?
I have a new thing that is new. And it actually is a favorite thing this week, at least. So I donated to the Harry Potter Alliance, their Indiegogo campaign. They do an annual fund. If you don't know Harry Potter Alliance, fans who are activists, they're amazing. I have, as a reward, you know, for giving, a t-shirt that says, "Books turn muggles into wizards." And it actually is my new favorite thing. I wore it yesterday to school. Everyone loves it. I felt great. It was all good.
Completely cool. That sounds great. So my new favorite thing is not really a thing, but it's new, and it's a favorite thing, sort of, this week. So it is the New Tech City, which is a WNYC podcast. They are doing something called the Bored and Brilliant Project, which is challenging people. Every day there's a new challenge to try to get you to kind of dissociate from your phone for a little while and spend some time sort of just daydreaming or doing other things or finding other ways to be productive. And so some of the challenges, I believe it's only for a week, which makes me really sad because I want to have a new challenge like every day.
Oh, I thought it was a month.
It might be, maybe it's a month, but I still want it all year. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
One of the challenges was to delete a time-wasting app, which I was really struggling with thinking, why am I going to delete this? Because I'm going to take it back tomorrow. But I deleted Reddit and I have not looked at it.
Wow.
Since whenever, a few days ago, and it's been good. I have not been wasting too much time. And then today it was trying not to check social media or putting up an away message for an hour or all day on your email to try to be productive. They also, it ties in with their podcast. They're talking about it on their podcast each day. And they also recommend downloading this app called The Moment or Moment. And it tracks how long you're on your phone every day.
Yeah.
Which just, I've heard so of that. I feel like my app is not totally working, but because it's jumping, the numbers are jumping even when I'm not looking at it. But just the idea that I have this on my phone, anytime I go to look at it, I'm like, oh, no, right, because it's going to time it. Yeah. And so it's just making me aware of that I don't need my phone all the time. So, and I think that's really part of the purpose is just being aware of your usage, because nobody's saying don't use your phone ever, but just, you know, not using it to just totally waste time and that you can be doing other things. So the Bored and Brilliant Project.
I want to just add about that. One of the things that I found amazing on New Tech City, they were talking about not that you hold your breath when you're waiting for your emails to load. And so the guy who was on that day's podcast talked about he has a message that pops up that says, just breathe, or maybe breathe.
Oh my gosh.
And I've been thinking about that a lot because I think I probably do that. And that's crazy. And we all need to stop doing that.
Yeah.
And actually, the way I found out about this was on the NICEST listserv, which is a New York City independent school technologist group and listserv that's really fantastic. And somebody had posted, is anybody doing this project with their students?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I thought that such a great idea. And even though it might be ending this week or this month, whatever, I think it's still something that you could definitely incorporate into a library class, into a technology class, into any class.
Yep.
Just being aware and thinking about how you're using your technology.
Wouldn't it be fascinating to do that for Teen Tech Week?
Ooh.
Because
shake things up.
Yeah.
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 Huh. Well, I have a favorite thing, or maybe it's things as well. two kind of new things that are that's going on with me at BFS this year. I already am involved in several groups that are for young women in 7th and 8th grade. We've had a Young Women of Strength group going for a while. I've participated. There are groups established in the upper school for women and young feminists. And a colleague of mine and I decided we wanted to start a group for our younger potentially baby feminists, our fifth and sixth grade girls, because we wanted to make sure that they had a space where they felt like they could be themselves and we can talk about the things that are going on. They have a lot of ideas and a lot of things to say. So we started a group called Smart Girls at the Party. And you may have heard of before Amy Poehler, whom I love, I alluded to before. She has this website, this movement called Amy's Smart Girls. And we kind of use their website to get us started as far as like how we can structure our group. It was so wonderful that we've since like branched off into two other directions where we're having another Smart Girls group and the focus is game on. We're gaming. We're doing everything from video games to board games to actual physical sports and games. Fun, interactive stuff. Great. It's been fantastic. But kind of where Smart Girls can tie into what's going on in the library, this year, separate from that, we've kind of implemented not exactly a maker space in the library, but what we call a maker nook, where we have lots of little kits with all different kinds of potential creative outlets. So we have everything from like a 3D pen to like bookmaking kits and origami, and we're gonna continue and a little bits and makeys and the whole thing. So it's Kenzo, the same colleague that I do Smart Girls with, we decided we were gonna have Smart Girls at the maker table. So we created an after school class specific to making, creating, doing. And it has worked out so fabulously, and we have so much fun, and we were super bummed because our snow day took away our Smart Girls time at the maker table. So that's really one of my favorite things. It's been giving me the most joy this year to work with these young, strong, smart, super cool ladies who have all kinds of ideas, and it's so great to see them empowered and, you know, just doing stuff. It's my favorite thing.
I'm so jealous.
I mean, you can try Smart Girls at Browning. I just don't know how it's going to go.
So if we want to find out more about your library, Angie, where should we go?
Let's see. You could. I mean, you can follow me at Dewey Decimator, but probably my little Instagram at BFS Library. That's a fun one. What about you, Joy?
You can follow me on Twitter at InquiringJoy. Also on Tumblr, same handle.
I am on Twitter at MurphySarahAnn, and my library is on Twitter at LibraryBrowning, and my library is on Instagram at BrowningLibrary.
My library is on Twitter at PCSReaders. And if you want to continue to follow these conversations, with the Watchers Podcast, you can follow us at Watchers Podcast on Twitter, and you can see a link to all of our resources of things that we've mentioned in today's episode on watcherspodcast.tumblr.com. Thanks for listening.